Blog Talk Radio.
Black Bag Productions, located in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, is a full-service event planning company that treats you and your clients like A-list celebrities. From the selection of your design and creation of your invitation to the last goodbye and thank you for attending, they help you put love into the details without sacrificing quality. Give them a call today at 240-472-9432. Visit blackbagproductionsonline.com, and they'll show you how they can create an unforgettable event for you.
Sure that you are ready to have a great time with us and that you are able to grab your mimosa and toast as we are finally back together in person. This is monumental, would be the right word, I think. We have been having our regular Saturday happy hours for the last 16 months. Right. And, you know, what I find fascinating is that even though we weren't able to be together in person, just being able to look forward to that Saturday night Zoom call felt like we were together anyway. And, you know, we never forgot that we were apart. Certainly, and especially because one of us was all the way in Chicago, and even through the winter months, we celebrated Christmas, we celebrated New Year's, we did all that on the inauguration, we all had on our pearls, and we were watching and crying and screaming and cheering and doing all the things that we did for the inauguration. It was so much fun, but can I just tell you, this is so much better. Being in person, you never realize how much you enjoy being able to see your friends in person. It's one thing seeing them on Zoom, so you at least see their face, and you kind of have that sense of, okay, I see you. You know, that part, I see you. But in person, you get to hug. Mm-hmm. When I walked in the door yesterday, Dev gave me the biggest, longest hug ever, and it felt so, so good.
Hugs are healing.
They are. And, you know, I think the pandemic has been one of those things that has taught us that more than anything else, that human touch is so necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it when you're kids, you know, kids automatically hug.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Kids come up to you and you look at them and if you put your hands out, they come running. That was one of my favorite parts.
That was the first pop of champagne of the day.
Champagne!
Woo! Here we go! We would love to hug just for that. So, but, you know, I always am amazed how little kids just automatically come and hug.
Yeah.
And they give you the best knee hug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, if your knees are not good, that can be a problem.
So let me ask you to imagine this,
okay?
I did this with, like, 5,000 people. And one of the things that kids will always do, I want everyone listening and here, put your hands up in the air like this, and then squeeze your hand. Now, is that not what kids do when they want to have a hug? So anytime you want a hug, throw your hands up and squeeze your hands and say, hug me.
I love that.
Cute.
Can you imagine 5,000 people in a park doing that?
Yeah.
All the kids got hugs and the adults too.
Oh, sweet.
And I, you know, we all, just throughout this last 16 months, I think everybody has desperately wanted a hug.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in August when we lost Chadwick Boseman, the first thing everybody did was the Wakanda salute.
Yeah.
And I only found out recently that that is, in the deaf community, the symbol for hug, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I knew the hand, you know, I knew the hand thing. But I had no idea that that actually meant, I see you, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hug. And when I found that out, I was like, how appropriate is that?
Yeah.
see, I always thought it just meant I honor and recognize you, but
right.
That gives it a whole nother.
Exactly.
And how much easier it is instead of putting your hands up, we can now do that. Okay.
Right.
You're more sophisticated.
and y'all know that we are as sophisticated as they come.
Yeah, right.
So Dav is here, as I said, from Chicago, and we have been seeing her up and on, but mostly on,
mm-hmm.
on the Saturday Zoom calls.
Yeah.
What's it like being back home?
You know, this is just amazing. I was telling Valerie while we were driving across the Bay Bridge that I really love being home because of the greenery,
mm-hmm.
the lush greenery. And there is a distinct feeling on the East Coast that you don't get anywhere else, from the spirit of the people to the comfort of the land. And it's just something that's very embracing. Maybe it's just because I'm from here. But even when I'm in Chicago, I can spot someone who is from the East Coast without them even telling me.
That's very true.
And so there's just something about the nature and the spirit of people that came from the Eastern Quarter that you just recognize and you appreciate. And not to diminish that of anybody else anywhere else.
Oh, certainly.
It's just that it's recognizable.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And, I think everybody has a lift in their step once the greenery arrives.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I know
I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even though I suffer terribly from allergies, it's just something about it.
Mm.
I don't know how to explain it to somebody, especially somebody who might live out west. Here it's green all the time.
Yeah.
Or they live really far south in Texas and,
mm-hmm.
and deeper parts of Florida. But it's just, I don't know, it's something about it. You see the whole renewal of spring.
Yeah.
You see all of that, and it's a great reminder.
Now let me just share this. Maybe this is unique to the Eastern Shore. We went grocery shopping. Shall I give the name of the store?
Yeah.
Okay, Aldi. I love going to Aldi's in Chicago. The one here was way better, but but what I really appreciated, I can't tell you how friendly the people were.
Yes,
and again, that speaks to the spirit of the people of the East Coast. When I mean, people were just having nonsensical conversations with me. My glasses are fogging up. Oh, I'm so sorry. Here's where the better brats are, okay? You got these over here, but the better ones are over there,
right.
Okay?
I think this is honestly a Cambridge thing.
Okay.
Because when Anita and I first came out here one year, we went to, I think, the Food Lion.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked in and we were talking about what do we need, what are we going to pick up? And
mm-hmm.
we saw these grapes that were, oh, my God, those grapes. I will never forget those grapes. They were that good.
Yeah.
But we were looking at different fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this guy comes over and says, good morning, ladies. How are you? And we're like, hi. And for a minute, we thought, okay, he must work here.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't work there.
Yeah.
And we're looking at each other like, okay.
Yeah.
Why is he talking to us? Does he look crazy or something? Does he think we're armed? You know, but surely you kind of had that off-putting.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure there's a reason he's speaking to us. And then we walk further in the store and somebody else speaks.
Mm-hmm.
We came out of the store like, do we know those people?
I know. Is that not what I said? Yes. Do we know these people?
Deb said to me something like, strawberries, whatever the price was. I wonder if that's a good price. It'll try to see. Oh, yes, that's a good price.
And the blueberries, too. I mean,
yes.
There was not the blueberry. It was something.
Cherry.
Oh, the cherry. And that's how the cherries got
and
here.
And they were good.
Yeah.
Those cherries are good.
Yeah, they're
good.
Delicious. Because cherries are very expensive. They weren't really cheap, but they
right.
were at a good price.
Right.
And she just confirmed.
We found some bread. And there's the other bread over there. See where those people are?
The better ones.
The better ones.
The better ones.
The better ones.
That sounds like a brand name. More Better Bread.
I think you might have something there. Might have something.
More Better Bread.
Well, the voices that you heard chiming in are our dear, dear, dear host and friend, SJT, and Valerie. And Anita is, as usual, on the phone.
Working. Always working.
We have
stories about working in Cambridge.
My God.
It could be lethal.
The pictures. They are.
But
they
if
are
you have to work, this is the best place to work.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
It is.
The view, I cannot
even on a cloudy day.
Yes. It's raining.
And there are no cicadas here.
Yeah, that's right. There are no cicadas.
As lush and beautiful as the East is, this year the cicadas have been making
They have taken over.
They have taken over.
Yeah.
But they're not here.
No, they are not. And they're not in my neighborhood.
Really?
I have not seen any in my neighborhood.
How old is your building? Because if it's less than 17 years old.
They probably dug them up.
They dug them up. Right.
There you go.
And there you have it. My building
is
less than 17 years old.
Mine is more than 17 years old. And the cicadas are like, here we are.
Oh, yeah. They home. They home. They chilling. They come. But, you know, I just, I think that one of the things that I love the most about coming to Cambridge is when we come over that bridge. Mm-hmm. And the stories about coming over the bridge are hilarious enough. Because yesterday I was insane about getting over the bridge before the noon beach traffic. And there was none.
Exactly.
Can I just say, y'all need she's underestimating and undervaluing how maniacal these people get about crossing the Bay Bridge before 10 a.m.
Okay, so we might have a problem.
I mean,
no,
you all turned into wildebeest.
That's because we have been stuck in traffic. It's taking
hour.
Me almost an hour to go 4 or 5 miles.
I get it,
to get
but
to
I want
Bay
folks
Bridge.
To understand. They are not the same people. They turn into something else.
What are you trying to say, Deb? I mean, really.
We're walking across the bridge. We're cool.
We were. I mean, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Okay,
Mrs. Hyde.
Right.
But it was funny because Anita and I were in the car. We were like, okay, we on 50. We good.
Right.
We get to the place where I told you our little cheat road is, the Cape St. Clair or whatever road
right,
that is.
The cut through.
And I was ready. I stayed in the lane so that I would,
you
if I
exit.
Had to bail,
yeah. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a problem.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I could ride around to
sure.
the back and watch all the, you know. Well, I didn't know that the toll booths were gone.
Yeah,
they've been gone for a while.
And so that made all the I really believe that made all the
Oh, it did.
In the
and
world.
I forgot mm-hmm. that the toll booths were gone. I'm like, as I got closer, I thought, oh, right, that may be why we're going so smoothly.
No, believe me or not,
I
have been in a traffic jam recently when I came home, like a Friday, 5 o'clock,
wow.
folks were heading, and I sat for 45 minutes trying to cross, go 2 miles,
wow.
3 miles.
Here's the thing I just don't understand. How can there be a traffic jam when there's plenty of lanes?
Because there's 4 lanes and it goes to 2.
Right. The bridge only has 2 lanes.
Right. They blocked off 1 lane. And if they have the traffic coming the opposite direction,
oh,
they
that's
open
right.
up that other end. So they need
and
to
it's always
way.
That left side.
Right.
And I knew that, because I saw, I was like, 2-way traffic.
Yeah.
This is good. And I went, no, this is bad.
Because you lose a lane.
Right.
Right.
So I then quickly decided, yeah, we're not going on the 2-way. No.
Yeah.
And it is not my favorite bridge to cross. Mm-hmm. I quickly admit that and explained to Anita that I hated that bridge more than life itself, mm-hmm. with the exception of the Verrazano Bridge, which I truly hate.
What is that one?
In New York.
Oh.
The Verrazano Bridge is not for the faint of heart.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Especially if there's traffic.
Ooh. Not good.
And especially if it's raining.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't ask me how I know that.
I crossed the Bay Bridge when it was raining. That was not
it is not a fun time.
I crossed the Bay Bridge on a bicycle.
Yeah. Okay, this is a story.
Do they have a separate lane to bike?
They closed the Bay Bridge for the first time ever for a special charity event.
Oh, no.
It was Cycle Across America, Wheels Across America, WJZ when I was National Sales Manager
right.
Director of Marketing. We sponsored it. So my public affairs director and I said, well, we're riding a bike across the bridge. So we had to borrow bikes because I didn't have a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And the bike that I borrowed did not have a fat-ass seat. You know, my bike has a fat-ass seat, okay? There's nothing worse than sitting on somebody's bike that is, you know what I mean?
A banana seat.
Yeah,
for the bike. Now, that wouldn't have been so bad. Except that since our TV crew, news crew, knew we were participating in the Cycle Across America, we got our shirts on, we got our hats with JP's logo, and we're all stationed up and everything. The news crew decided to film us riding across the bridge. And you don't realize how high that bridge is,
mm-hmm.
and how it goes uphill,
exactly.
and you appreciate the concrete barriers in a car,
mm-hmm.
but on a bicycle, I could have flipped right over that sucker. And all I remember is thinking, please, dear God, don't let me fall off this bike on camera. Please. And so that just added more pressure.
Right.
Plus, my butt hurt for the entire length of the bridge.
Four miles long.
4 miles. I rode a guest bike across the Bay Bridge with a TV camera filming me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had gotten footage of that, because that would be hysterical. You know, I don't even know if I can find it in the archive. Somebody can pull it up with the story. But Susan yeah. Trotovic, who is my pal, the two of us took a photo of us after crossing, and we looked whooped, but we were so happy to still be standing.
Thank you. Thank you, Lord.
And of course, I took a car back. I was not about to ride back, but no, I had ridden a bicycle across that Bay Bridge.
Yeah. I walked across. They used to have a...
Yeah, didn't they have that thing?
The cherry. Yeah. Once a year. And you could walk across.
Yeah.
And you end up at Sandy Point. And then they had like a festival or something. I did that once.
I remember seeing that and thinking, okay, that would be kind of fun. And then I thought about it again. I was like, yeah, maybe not.
It wasn't bad. It was just wrong.
Well, the thing was, I hadn't thought about the water part.
Mm.
I thought, oh, man, what a great view. Right?
Yeah, that was cute. And the seagulls are flying at eye level, which is really weird because they're up high, but you're also up high. They're at eye level.
Yeah. I thought about all of that, and then I thought about how much water was neat.
Since I rode a bike, riding a car is a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a problem with crossing the bridge.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my only problem is when it's windy and rainy.
Yeah,
the windy part
the
is
windy
not
part.
So good.
And they'll tell you.
There's a bridge move.
It waves. Yes.
It waves. And they'll give you a wind warning.
And when you see that wind warning, it's
sometimes
like.
Sometimes they close the bridge down.
I could not go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
You got to go all the way around Delaware.
Wow.
You got to go to Delaware and then come basically to 95 and come along in order to get across. You can't cross the bridge.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's when I keep my ass at home.
Pretty much.
You know,
it's like a good day to stay home.
Yeah,
I need to go.
I'm sorry, it's wind on the bridge today. I won't be in.
Right. And I don't see a problem with that at all. None. So now here we are, 100 plus days into 46's administration. Hallelujah.
Yay!
What a difference.
Because, you know, I don't know who might have been listening the last time, but we were talking about the election, and we were none too thrilled that we were even having to worry about it.
Yeah. It was too damn close.
It really was. Way too close. So what do we want to fight for now? Because we know midterms are coming.
We want to fight for the right to vote. We want to fight every single voter suppression effort that's being made, and a lot of them are being made. And we want to encourage even more people to register and to vote. So even with the suppression that will occur, we can still win.
And I would make that two parts.
Okay.
We want to continue to fight for the right to vote, and we want to continue to fight for our vote to count, because those are two distinct different things. Because the legislation that has been passed, even in Georgia, I think Texas may be signed soon, Florida. Not only have they suppressed the access to the polls, which in essence is the right to vote, but also they're talking about overturning a vote or taking control
over if they don't
Secretary
like who got elected.
If they don't like the outcome,
nullifying
the vote. So you've got to be aware. And don't be fooled by the not being able to get water in a line. That is a red herring. People are getting upset about that. No. That can be easily resolved. The problem is they can take over, the state legislator can take over a local election or a local election board or a county election board if they don't like the outcome.
Right.
That is not just egregious. Yeah. That's very scary.
It is. And
so getting to the polls and voting is one thing.
Right.
Having your vote count is something else.
It's completely something else.
And this is worse than the Jim Crow laws.
Absolutely.
Because they didn't take over the vote.
Exactly.
Which made you arbitrarily count jelly beans. And even if you were right, they said you were wrong. Or give you some literacy test with half the rest of the population couldn't pass either.
Right. How about the person administering the test?
Couldn't even pass. Yeah, this is worse. This is worse. And it's worse because it's all based on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fraud.
None.
And there's always mishaps during elections. But we're talking about major laws that are changing long-standing state laws based on a lie. And unfortunately, you've got too many Republican legislators that have bought into this.
Yes.
And this is and people who have bought into this, which means they won't be voted out either.
The legislators don't necessarily believe the lie. They just want to win. So they're saying, if this lie will help me win again, I'm okay with the lie.
I think some of them believe the lie,
It's probably a combination
of both, which is scary.
But it is, you know, their way, I do agree with you, their way of giving them a leg up. It's like, you know, you can't win the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's. I think we've gotten to the stage
they win it all
politics time. Where let's win that all together.
And that happened to the concept of public service and serving your citizenry.
No.
That because the citizen, you know, the browning of America is what's fueling all of this.
Yeah,
let's just be straight up real. You know, we're talking about majority minority communities, and we're talking about not just white privilege, but basically people that are afraid that, you know, folks of color are taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing,
and it's not going to get any better.
Right.
Anything is going to get higher degrees
in the next 20 years. Yeah.
In the next 5 years, even in terms of migration and changes.
That's why they want for folks from south of the border to come here, because they're afraid if they become citizens, that they'll vote Democrat.
Well, not only that, but the oxymoron is they will begin to be treated as the way they have been treating others.
Oh, and they don't want to be minority.
And they don't want to be the minority. They don't want to be the minority.
Historically, that has not happened. But that's what Blacks,
exactly.
When Mandela was released and Blacks came to power in South Africa, they didn't treat white people the way white people had treated them.
Exactly.
And to be clear, if you look at cities that have majority Black folk, like Atlanta and the like, you have not seen a redistribution of capital wealth.
Right.
It is still capital control, capital assets is still in the hands of majority. So this, there's two things going on. There's the, you know, what happens when they get in power. We've got cities that look like that now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that really affect and change your life automatically? No, because the wealth is still controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And that redistribution has to happen as well. So
that has to happen gradually.
Yeah, but see, in the minds of what people have done in, you know, social media and the like, they've created the fear factor so
mm-hmm.
that people think one way, which is if they get the vote, Lord have mercy. I mean,
my housing values are going to go down.
And
I'm going to lose my job.
Yeah. Really, we've been in Lisbon since. We've lived in Atlanta. We've lived in Charlotte. That doesn't happen.
Right.
It doesn't happen that way at all. So that's part of it. And the only other thing I would say is, which is making me really think about, should there be term limits? And I know people don't like it. I'm done with the lack of stability,
mm-hmm.
with the fact that this is not even about policy to help the people who elected them. This is about maintaining power.
Right.
You know, and I think something has happened, switched, aggravated by the former president, but it's just changed the nature. And, of course, you know, when Obama became president,
mm-hmm.
you saw it then.
Yes.
It started changing then. In fact, it used to be the House of Representatives, because they represented local districts and you had so many folks, and they didn't have to win a statewide election. So they won in their community. The House has always been more partisan and more divided and more contentious, just
mm-hmm.
by nature. You've got 453, whatever the figure is.
435.
Okay, that's what. No, this is champagne. This is mimosa.
Okay.
That's mimosa talking. So the House has always been contentious.
Mm-hmm.
But the Senate, when you're talking two senators, had to win a statewide election, which meant they had to be more generalist. Everybody had to vote for them. They had to win enough. Has always been more civil, less partisan, and able to work together. Even fighting hard on a bill, they could still go out to lunch together. There was no
exactly.
the personal animosity was not there.
Right.
They fought hard over legislation or over policy in fighting for their particular state, but you did not see the announcement by the Senate leader on Inauguration Day that our primary goal is for this administration not to have a second term.
What the hell is that?
Exactly. And it did the same thing for this one, too.
Right.
Or we're not going to vote for any of his legislative proposals.
Right.
Even those proposals would help their states. You did not see this personal animosity. You did not see leadership campaigning against other leadership, whether it was ranking or whether it was in terms of the controlling. You did not see that animosity.
Yeah. And,
now it's just as bad, if not worse.
And it's blatant.
Than the House.
It's downright blatant.
It's just nasty,
and
it's unproductive. It is childish. It is not for the best of the country. And I don't mind partisanship, because if you are loyal to your party, you know, there are certain things, but this is not partisanship. This is just anti-American. Mm-hmm. And I can't do my job effectively. I can't live my life effectively because decisions have not been made properly for me to even get my tax return on time,
or my mail on time.
How about that?
I mean, these are things of this incompetency level for longstanding senators that have been there for 30, 40 years.
And the thing that is really annoying is that they are standing there as if they can do nothing, and they're willing to go along to get along so that they can collect that six-figure paycheck that comes from your tax dollars, and then say, well, we might have to think about this. What's there to think about? Ain't nothing to think about. People are hungry. People are sick. People are dying.
How do you delay?
How do you do that?
How do you delay a payment of just $600?
Right.
Fighting over bullshit when people have lost their jobs, are living day to day without medicine, or lost their jobs and lost their health care, in the middle of
lost
a pandemic,
their home.
Lost their home, or they're living under a potential eviction notice that they may have to move any minute. How do you even tell a family that you have to wait because we can't figure out what we're going to do?
Right.
They didn't have a delay in their paycheck. They have not lost their health care. They have premium health care.
Well,
gold standard health care
for life.
Mm-hmm. For life. You can
and a pension.
You serve one term and get premium health care for life. The problem is they have not experienced, they're so far out of touch with Americans.
Completely.
And they're so far out of touch even with the middle class, and certainly with low-income Americans. There's more people in poverty now than there were before. We have a higher rate of child poverty and child hunger than some third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to be
the greatest
country
in
the
world. Right.
You know, that's no excuse.
For there
I'm
to
sorry,
be,
there's no excuse for that.
And for there to be people saying, well, people are making more money on unemployment and don't want to go back to work. Okay, so the logic there means they're not making enough at their job,
exactly.
Which means the minimum wage needs to come up,
and
which means
of,
you need to vote for that and get on with it.
A number of companies are raising their minimum wage. It's not a mandate.
Right.
To get workers.
They're figuring it out.
$15 an hour, which is what people have been asking for all along.
For years.
How do you
And living on $15 an hour, if you are in a major metro area like we are,
even if you're
nothing.
Single,
it's nothing.
Much less
than
if you have a child.
Oh, right. If you have a child,
you're in trouble.
Hang it.
You are still the working poor.
And you
the
have
working
and
poor.
You have to actually work that second job.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if that second job is paying you minimum wage, woohoo, you're making $30 an hour. But that's before taxes.
That's before
rent, medical.
How about child care?
What is your child
If
I could stand
to
be bothered with somebody else's children for 8 hours, I can't believe I would be doing child care because I'd make a killing.
Yeah,
you would now, especially.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'd make a
it's
killing.
Crazy.
And
yeah.
a newborn?
Yeah. Newborn.
People are charging $500 a week.
They're charging more than that.
Minimum.
I can remember my I had a babysitting business in
Only
Columbia.
Only she would have the babysitting business.
I had a babysitting business. When I arrived to Columbia, I took a mother's care Red Cross course at Slayton House. So I learned how to take care of an infant and as well as give mouth-to-mouth and resuscitation, all that. So I had a certification. I was like 12, 13 years old from the Red Cross through the Columbia Association. and I had a babysitting business that I had a manila folder and I had a form for the family to fill out because I had so many clients. I could have worked every day. One summer, and again, I'm like 13 years old, I made $500. We're talking in the 60s.
That was a lot of money.
$500.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, man.
Yeah. and I charged like 75 cents an hour. Now you know how much money I made for 500. But then I charged after midnight $1.25. I was the only one that was doing that. After midnight. So, and then I charged an extra per child. I could do two children, but a third one, because you got, and I had all that laid out. I had a preform with their favorite toys, bedtime and all that stuff. So I knew their bedtime, their allergies and all that. I would take that form with me. And I was so many different families' very first babysitter. Now, if I had kept my little business up, I could have owned Cambridge.
You really could have.
And now okay. you can't work after 9 if you're under 16 years old.
No.
Is that
in fact, you can't even work at 13.
Right.
Which means you can't babysit anybody who's got a date.
My daughter went to work at Mary's and she's 16. And they said, you can't work later than 9 p.m. unless you're 16. So she would work till 9 and miss all her good acts. And then the next summer, for the next 5 or 6 summers, when she's 16 and up, she could stay out for whatever.
Right.
And do that. But I was just thinking as you're talking, I appreciate your industriousness. I'm like, after midnight?
Well, yeah, because that means we'll go out.
No, I get you. I'm just like, don't you? Well, I don't know what the law may have changed between the time you were 13 and take my child.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's two different jobs, though. I don't think the babysitting part is regulated, whereas if you're working at a formal place where you have to get a W-2 and all that stuff, that's regulated.
Yes,
but
right.
You're talking about a one-on-one private transaction.
Gotcha.
You know, but again, you're talking date night, mom and dad go out to a movie and dinner. You know, they get home at 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
the surcharge makes sense. It totally makes
sense.
So,
and those rates, I'm sure, have gone up to $5 an hour.
Oh, they're more than that.
They're
like 15, 20.
Well,
they are minimum wage.
If I had kept my babysitting business, again, at 13, I'm clearing $500. I could be clearing $500,000, you know,
like I said,
if
I wanted to be bothered with somebody else's children for that long, well, I'd be rocking it. Trust.
Absolutely.
So
child care, you know, and of course, in senior care, let's not talk about senior care.
And all of us are in that senior care category.
Yes,
we are. But I have a question, because I think I've been listening, you know, always do this.
Yes, she does.
But I have a question, because like, when you ask why are politicians responding the way that they are, I believe that the cheese has moved, and it's moved a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they're acting the way that they are. It's because our democracy, moving on the trajectory of capitalism, is headed for disaster, and they know it.
Mm-hmm.
They know that the bigger piece of that cheese is getting ready to flip, so they're grabbing what they can now
in the space
can while they are living in this space, because it may not happen for in their lifetime.
Right.
We're looking 50, 75 years down the line, and we are just the victims of this transformation. The buzzword that they're dealing with now, coming out of this whole COVID experience, is adaptive transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is going to be the same again.
Right.
Yeah.
So every paradigm that we have lived under, that we've become accustomed to, is shattered, and they're rebuilding. They are shifting. They are reconfiguring. We have new currencies. We were talking about this the other day. We have the Bitcoin and
we're working
the,
from home.
Yeah,
and
people are working
from
home, and no folks aren't going back into those buildings. You know, going through Chicago, and you all, someone had offered this the other day about the hydroponics. They said, what are they going to do with all these high-rises?
Mm-hmm.
When we take a look at our farming industry and the food industry and how the toxins are just wiping out thousands and thousands of acres of farmland, right?
And climate
that
change,
we're
going
to have
too,
to move
right?
it into an aquaponics, you know, hydroponics kind of
stable
scenario,
so
that we have food.
Yeah.
So I just think that we need to look with a very wide lens now and not be afraid to look through that futuristic lens.
Mm-hmm.
We do have to do, Valerie, as you're saying, be conscientious citizens to get out there and vote And don't vote for partisan issues, but vote for what you know is going to be best for developing the best future for you.
Exactly.
And the politicians are not engaged in that conversation. They're advancing self-interest. We are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So understand that.
And we've been in trouble for a while. Because when people were voting Republican, particularly, you know, after Bush and particularly the evangelicals, they were voting for policy, anti-abortion, primarily anti-abortion, and basically sold their souls to get a president in office and took for anti-abortion, which I find incredibly ironic. And backwards thinking. So you sacrifice everyone else's life to save the life of a fetus. I'm not saying a fetus is not important, but there are so many other things that are also just as important, as in the mother's life, as in the ability to have a job and child care and all that stuff.
And to support that child.
Or have health care for that
child.
So how do you vote for someone who is anti-abortion but also wants to abolish the Affordable Care Act.
And that same person will vote for fetal stem cells.
Correct.
It's like
they don't get the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians are blowing this up and living on this. And in terms of talking about evangelicals, you would think those people would be Christian.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a Christian, a true Christian, I'm going to say this purposely. How in the hell?
Shame on you.
Do you vote for Donald J. Trump? If you are a Christian, how do you vote for such a man who has such a absence? We're not talking low moral character.
No moral character.
How do you vote for someone who strips a, literally and figuratively, strips a newborn child from the arms of its mother and put it in a cage or separate the two and don't have the mechanism to put the two back together?
Right. And think that that's okay.
But I think that's a deterrent. So maybe the mom won't come
or the rest of the family won't come.
Well, the interesting response to that, because I've asked that question and gotten a response, is that they're very narrowly focused.
I'm saying they're focused on no abortion. They want to make sure.
No. I'm talking about the people who vote for this man. Who did vote for him again pre-January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Understand that.
Right.
These are people who then later, you know, disavowed after January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
They are one-topic voters. And they're a bunch of them. There's one group that is about taxes.
Right.
About
finance.
That
man for them is gold.
Yeah.
Right.
And you've seen that, and they've gotten things out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in favor of that, they took a blind side to everything else that he said.
Right.
All the lies, all of that. Taxes, that's all I care about. He's going to do deregulation. What's the second one? If you are about those things, you voted for this man. Now, you have all types of folks who were, you know, supremacists and all the rest of that and white privilege. But I'm talking about the people with the money.
Mm-hmm.
So those folks weren't writing no checks.
They voted their pocketbook.
These people
as opposed to their own moral character.
They were voting for those
their pocketbook
items. And that's the answer to that question. And quite frankly, when all of this kind of levels out, you have 11% of African-American men voted for this man as well.
Right.
You know,
that is,
it was the highest percentage.
And they finally, the Republican conference finally figured that okay, here's the end. Here's where we can really now capture and go after the black male vote.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, black women, whatever.
Never get
but
out.
The black men
showed up for him.
Oh. And you know what? And I have a personal problem with that.
Oh, I do too.
Big time. You have to tell me why you voted for him and not for Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell me you voted for him and not for better health care, for minimum wage, jobs, making sure that families stay together, and basically have better moral character. How can you just ignore the path that we've all gone through as Black people to get here and vote for a man that doesn't give a shit about us, that would rather and has grown up in such a prejudiced and one-sided a white privileged world? How can you even think about voting for such a man?
And I'll tell you how the disinformation campaign that they put out on Kamala was that she was putting Black men in prison when she was the California DA, and that she should have been saving them. Look, they were fucking criminals.
Yeah.
Okay? They were criminals.
And,
they deserve to go to jail.
Well, but she also reformed that justice system.
Mm-hmm.
So that way there was less Black men or whomever was incarcerated for phony charges and fraud charges. Because she realized that the justice system does not work in favor. And I'd rather have her in that position.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for some Black men, white men, Hispanic, I don't care what color you are. You rape somebody, you
you're going to jail.
You're going to jail.
You're going to jail. And you need to go to jail. And, you know, just watching her during some of the confirmation hearings. And the way she would drill down and drill, all I could imagine was, this is the female Perry Mason sitting right here.
Oh, yeah.
Girlfriend
oh,
was
good.
Not having. She said, yes or no answer. She drilled over. She's like, you drew that. Can you tell me this?
The interesting thing about, it's on one hand it's good and another hand it's not so good. So, our vote gets dismissed sometimes because they think we automatically vote Democrat.
Yep.
We automatically do these things. And I don't like that either because I'm not
voting
Democrat just because I vote my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I may be on one end, I may be on another end.
Exactly.
You vote your interest. So that's the one thing that we as a people have to change how we do what we do. And it gets taken for granted by the Democrats too.
Sure. It does. And there's no question about that.
To be clear, we've got to relook at the importance of our vote at the local level.
Yep.
You know, because we're up here at the federal level. We're up here 2 years,
exactly.
4 years.
Yeah. Exactly.
If we don't show up in this election cycle,
2022,
I don't care if we don't show up in the same fervor, then we missed the conversation.
Well, look at the changes of the voting laws. That's not happening at the federal level. That's happening
at the
state
level.
Right.
And
people
look
still aren't getting it.
And look at the recount structure of certain counties. That's at the county level that were able to dismiss certain absentee ballots or whatever.
Yes.
So you've got to vote and local. And it's
people
from the state. That's not at the federal level.
No.
That's at the local level. And the changes in how everything from school board becomes important.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot ignore our elected officials from local all the way up to federal.
And we need to get more of us in those positions.
We also have to be aware of who's there. We need a
pipeline,
and we need to know who else is there. But I'm very conservative on some things, but in terms of I have some. They used to be called Republican values.
Mm-hmm.
I want a efficient federal government. I don't want overspending, overtaxing, whatever. But I'm also on my civil rights side. I know that we need a safety net for people who the system just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
That means food stamps. That means housing. That means, you know, making sure that people have jobs. When I vote, I don't vote automatically Democratic. I also have to look at the candidate. And I also have to vote my moral values.
So do we need to dismantle the two-party system?
We may need to. We need a viable third party, which I think would be fine.
Yeah, I think people are starting to think about that.
Absolutely.
It's a very strong reality.
And it's not that we operate under a two-party system. I mean, we have a multiple-party system.
Right.
But we talk about it in the context of the two-party system.
Because usually that third or fourth party is some crazy party or some crazy person, you know, that
which is crazier than a Trump?
Well, like I said, it used to be.
People will say just tap those other parties because they assume that they will take votes from the party
from the two major parties.
Or that person is put up to run as a third party to take
the
vote away.
Yep, yep. Right.
Sometimes
yes.
You know, all this stuff is going on behind the scenes, and we just see a third party candidate emerge, but we don't know that the Republicans have funded
right.
them or the Democrats have funded
them.
Say
Ralph Nader.
So, well, Ralph Nader, Perot, who was always
yes,
Ross Perot, you know,
who coined that term, the bully pulpit, you know.
Yeah. So, but I have to select who's the. Sometimes it's not the best candidate. Sometimes you're not going to get the ideal candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And when people stay home, they basically are voting for the worst candidate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no excuse for that. There's no excuse
well,
for staying home
yes.
for any
and my,
reason.
My
I'm
mantra
sorry.
Is people died to make sure you could vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was
And people
fortunate.
Died when you didn't vote.
Right.
Because look how many people
right.
died in COVID. Look how many
yes.
people died
mm-hmm.
at the
yes.
border who were captured and whatever. People have died because you didn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
People
and it,
have
yeah. and
have
I think and I think it's just one
vote.
Of those things that we are exceptionally fortunate
mm.
to be the age that we are and have lived through so many amazing world events.
Yeah.
We were all old enough to it, right.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all old enough. I remember very well watching the Kennedy funeral on my black and white TV. And,
I remember the moon landing.
And think, right, the moon landing. Ooh. My great-grandmother was still alive,
yeah.
and she said, those men ain't gone no moon. Okay.
Yeah,
she didn't believe in it.
No, she said they were in Arizona.
Sounds
I'm glad you mentioned how we are connected internationally, globally.
Yes. Yeah.
And we were having this conversation for the first time. My nephew, 20, 21 years old, inside of a conversation where we're watching with a show I like, the comedian.
Hassan.
So he's talking about something that happened in Spain and how
mm.
they were arresting young people, but they all went to school at NYU, now living in Spain. My point here is that the globalization of the world
mm-hmm.
in terms of our human connection,
mm-hmm.
which is driving, I think, dismantling of not just our democracy, but
everybody
else's
yeah.
political
yeah.
system as well,
yeah.
because it's all tied, as we witness through this pandemic,
mm-hmm.
the new economies that are still
mm-hmm.
emerging, and who's driving that? I mean, Amazon raked in everything, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right. And now they're about to buy the MGM.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I'm just saying those things.
I want my private jet.
Yeah. So when we can enter
the National Hall for Prime, $99 room rate discount.
All right now.
You hear me, Bezos?
But wait, I know, right, Bezos, yeah. So I think that when you have when we think about new political systems, do we need to think outside of America?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Is it, the Northern Hemisphere? I mean, what is that going to look like?
More Americans to understand what's going on outside of America, and to recognize that many, 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 many people in the rest of the world are not trying to come here. They believe that they may or may not believe that they live in the best country in the world, but they like where they live.
Right.
So, you know, I watch the world news. I watch the nightly news. I watch the nightly news. And I'm dismayed at how many international things are not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a major volcano in Africa that I didn't see it on the news. You know, there's all kinds of things happening across the world.
Mm-hmm.
That unless you don't go to Al Jazeera or
right.
yeah. specify, mm-hmm. you'll never know.
You'll never know.
So and you yeah. don't. So you also don't see the human interest stories that those other networks do. You see, oh, those people have issues like mine, family, job. You know, you don't see it.
Well, the phrase "the world is truly a small place."
Yeah. My goodness.
Becomes ever clearer.
Well, worse yet, the term "America first."
That bothers me.
It
yeah.
bothers me greatly. Now, I love my country.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
I
that
respect
that
my
phrase
country.
Bothers
I have
me
fought for. And there's some things that I want America to do. I would love to have more manufacturing here.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have more products from here. But at the same time, for those businesses that are making great products, I want them to be able to export as well as get their own. I don't want to sacrifice American values
mm-hmm.
for international, but we've got to involve
but
and participate in a global.
I was about to say,
some parts of the world, and that
just changed, yeah.
Where the common good is more important than the individual good. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to be in a nation where the individual good is paramount, which is what it is. But there doesn't seem to be any, oh, and by the way, we care about other people. It's just the individual good. Whereas in some other nations, the collective good is more important.
Well, I also think we look sometimes too short-term. We're not looking long-term.
Exactly.
We're not looking, and to us, short-term is within a four-year presidency.
Right. 4 years.
As opposed to looking at a 10-year, 15, 20-year,
100-year. What will my children's world look like when they're my age?
Right. But even, I think 20 years is still long enough in a global and digital economy because things are changing so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think 40 years ago, we could have looked at 50 years because things were not changing.
Oh, hell, 40 years ago, none of us thought we'd be here, let's face it.
Oh, yeah.
But
given the advances of technology and how fast that's moving, I think 20 years is what used to be an equivalent 100 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, a 10-year perspective over two presidential or two and a half presidential terms, we don't do that.
No.
We don't do that to help Americans.
Right.
We are still a global economy.
We are. Let me ask you this. The thing that gave me the wake-up call on this is when they had the oil crisis at the gas stations, and every gas station was shut down along the whole Eastern Seaboard.
It wasn't the oil crisis.
It was a ransom asked for that was paid for in cryptocurrency. We don't know who paid it. Yeah.
We don't know
where it came from. So my point is, who has the power? So we can sit here and debate all day about politics and who's doing this and who's upset that. But when that kind of stuff happens, that was a wake-up call that we are not in control.
Well,
and we can shut
America
you down in a flash.
Gets its cybersecurity systems in place, its protections in place.
But let me make sure everyone has my point. That's what you do.
Okay. Well, I do FCC. I do FTC. I do
yeah, you do all that.
Justice.
So if anyone's going to know, you would. Okay.
Until now, it hasn't been economically advantageous for the companies to make sure that they're cyber secure.
No, it hasn't.
Now they recognize, oh, shit, I need to get my...
No, the problem is that there needs to be an edict from the top. And I'm talking about governmental.
Right.
There's such things called critical infrastructure. Oil lines, energy lines, communications, banking, basically the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You shut that down, this country comes to a screeching halt.
So and we know it can happen.
Some of the pressure is coming from the shareholders saying, look, Exxon, look, Chevron.
Well, they had three major decisions in one day.
You need to...
Yes.
Tighten it up.
Well, but that was a climate change issue.
Right, that's true.
That was climate change. But the same thing is happening on cybersecurity.
We're running low on mimosas.
Well, we need another. I use a full bottle of champagne. We need another bottle.
One down, 11 to go.
And we are serious.
Miss Anita on her computer has something to say too. So what were you saying?
I was going to say that, you know, when you talk about globalization, you first have to, the American people don't understand what globalization is.
No.
Number one.
They just think we're dealing with another country and we should keep our money in
the
country.
Right? The fear is America has always been painted as the leader, the country that solves everybody's problems. Right.
Yep.
But in reality, if you look at us from an educational standpoint, if you look at us in any of those metrics, we are way down the totem pole.
Exactly.
And that's something that is not discussed at all, in the world view.
No.
Okay. So now you have, like you said, it's these new currencies and everything out there. Business people understand exactly what that is. There's no confusion there. There's a lack of information from those who are operating in that space and the rest of us who are like, well, what the hell? And what does that mean to me at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no bridge to understanding that when those people got paid in Bitcoin, and I was surprised to hear that.
I was.
You know, that the ransom was.
I mean,
that just says that's a whole new world of how things operate. And just imagine, that's what we learned about that situation. How often has it already happened?
Thank you.
Multiple times.
That is not the first time.
It's not the first time. The first time we paid something off.
Yeah.
Was not the first time there was a hack. Remember the solar system?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened directly under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Nothing was done. It was a enterprising reporter that broke that story. But that was a test. I really think that was a test.
Yeah.
And
the last 4 years
failed
was
the test.
the last 4 years was a
yeah,
bust.
And I'm surprised,
we failed
quite frankly, I'm not surprised that more hasn't happened.
Right.
But you look at Baltimore City. Baltimore City's database was under ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple places that have not been reported.
Right.
It is the easiest way. I mean, if I ever wanted to go to the dark side, I could make a whole ton of money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We all
yeah,
could.
You could.
Yes.
You want
to
have that conversation?
No, and, you don't have to be a computer genius.
No,
to sit in your garage.
You don't.
In fact, in your parents' garage, because this could be a 16, this could be a 14, 15-year-old.
Yep.
This is not
no
rocket science.
Mess
no,
up. Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
You know. Department of Defense is hacked, then you know we have not done our job.
And the aliens got them.
When it comes to cybersecurity.
Exactly. Okay. So the reason Deb was talking about the aliens.
I was up all morning watching the little documentary. But the thing that I found very interesting about it is that, yeah, we've seen it. We've seen it. I think that we are being primed for the reality that there are other people out here beyond us.
So the Marvel world will come to pass.
It will.
You know, Thor will land somewhere
but wait,
with the hammer and all of that. And, you know,
yeah.
We're
inside
part
of
the
their,
nine realms.
Inside their conversation is a conversation. So there was an articulation that what these aliens, if you will, are concerned about.
I have a job, too.
Okay. Oh, she got to go.
Yeah,
she
got
to oh, yeah,
refill
mimosa.
The mimosa coat, picture.
Except they're taking a look at our hotspots for nuclear
mm-hmm.
use. And for pollution. Now, as soon as I heard that, I said, this is politically driven. Now, why would aliens come from a whole other solar system to come to our planet and be concerned about our nuclear use and our pollution? My point is that we ain't the only ones out here, okay? So when we talk about the concern of our politicians and who's controlling what, nobody's in control of anything because we have a whole new element that just now is being recognized publicly.
Close encounters of the third kind.
Right, and we don't know. And my point here is that they are in communication. For them to know what they're concerned about, there had to be some level of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So this, they're not just showing up and disappearing. They're not just making a flash visit and you know, grabbing bodies like we see in all these pieces.
Right.
They are in communication.
Like I said.
And they're following.
The Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And they're following submarines.
So,
Air Force pilots are like, what the? I mean, there was a show on a segment of 60 Minutes where they interviewed Air Force pilots. And some of them were like, I was kind of afraid to tell anybody I saw this because they think I was crazy, but there were like four of us flying together. We all saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we were like, did you see that thing fly by at 600 miles an hour or whatever it was? Did you see it follow our submarine? Did you see?
Yeah.
So once they realized that they had all seen it, that we all say we saw it, which we did, we can't individually be accused of being crazy.
Right. Or we can just have a room all together at the
mm-hmm.
crazy.
No.
So
yeah, no, but basically
yeah,
they were like,
somebody over there had a conversation like we're having a conversation right now. Is my point.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I say Marvel Universe. Whew. If you're not a fan of Marvel movies, now's a good time to get into it so you can understand.
Dick Gregory always said, if you want to know what's coming, go to the movies.
And that's so true because I remember watching some movie. It was some political thriller. And somebody said, oh, our government wouldn't do that. I just looked at them and I said, let me tell you something. I lived on an Air Force base for a long time. I will never, ever say what our government will not
do,
would not do. And that was the second pop of champagne for the day, girl.
Mm-hmm.
I will never say that. When I watch, and when one of my favorite shows of all time, The West Wing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I loved it, yeah.
And then I realized, when I was watching it recently, I did a binge watch this past winter because,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know,
where you
what else was there to do? And then I saw the name Lawrence O'Donnell, and I was like, wait a minute. Lawrence O'Donnell was Lawrence O'Donnell at night? And then I realized, yes, he was one of the main creators of the West Wing. Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC.
Ah.
And then I was like, that's great. He worked on The Hill. He worked in the White House.
Right. No wonder
mm-hmm.
things were so...
Because you would watch the show and have
mm-hmm.
to remember that you were watching TV. You weren't watching something that was happening right then because you would get so invested and go, oh, my God, what is going on? What is happening? And when he talks at night, you know, the look that he has on his face when certain things happen, like, I tried to tell y'all in fiction, y'all wasn't listening.
Yeah, sure.
So with that said, now that we are seeing light at the end of the tunnel, hallelujah, what is one of the first things that you would like to do once the world kind of, quote unquote, opens back up?
Travel internationally. Go on the trips that have been delayed from last year to this year to next year.
True.
And I've got a couple of them. So that's for me, travel internationally.
Yeah.
Because that's why I want to get a broader world view, and I just like to see other places, and especially older places.
Yeah.
Governments and cultures that have existed significantly longer than ours. So that's it, travel internationally.
Yeah, and when you travel internationally, I must say the first time I went internationally, it was when I realized, well, America's really not that old.
No.
Hello.
And then when I went
down buildings that are 20 years old.
And when I went to the Louvre and they had this display, I think it was of a tree, and the castle. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, that's how old?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Well, they've got buildings that are hundreds.
And you
years
and
old.
You start thinking, yeah, we're only 200 years
yes.
old.
And our buildings don't last.
Don't even last 5 years.
Yeah,
the pyramids been here forever.
Well, you know the funny thing about all of this is, you know, we the debt that we incur
right
is sold out internationally. People who own the building in the United States are China because our debt is sold internationally. And it used to be a joke about who really owns Rockefeller Center.
Right.
Remember
right,
that? All
right.
of that. So, you know, we float these notes. We float them internationally. We're already in a global economy.
Point.
Yep,
yes,
you know,
yep, yes.
That's real world.
And not just a global economy. We are dependent
on
foreign countries.
Exactly.
And our economy has been shaped by that. I went to
Vancouver. Quite different than a global economy.
No, you're right.
I went to Vancouver and they said, the property values, the prices of the property have increased significantly.
I'm going to be real crispy.
What?
The bacon.
Oh, it's destroyed.
Is it gone?
It's destroyed. It's like charcoal.
For real?
Yeah, for
Are
real.
Are you serious?
I wouldn't lie. However, I brought a lot of bacon. Okay.
That she did.
It really did. When I went downstairs, it was like smoking.
Okay.
So it's, you know. So, and that was,
but we got a lot of bacon.
That was Smithfield. Anyway, long story short, there is more bacon.
Okay,
that is critical.
And I just took
the deal with the important issues here.
Oh no.
The bacon.
But I was, talking about the Chinese.
That was good.
So the Chinese have bought up so much of Vancouver that Vancouver residents can't often rent or buy in that town.
Really?
Yeah, really. Really, the Chinese are like, oh, this is a market we can control, and they have done so.
Right. Yeah, well, I was surprised that Vancouver was very heavily populated Asian.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't realize that.
But they flourish,
wow.
You know. And the thing that cracks me up is, love my brothers and sisters. But we play checkers with the best of them.
And they play chess.
They play chess three-dimensional.
I'm going to say they play three-dimensional chess, not just a straight board. They
That's
play
right.
three-dimensional chess.
They are strategic. They are focused.
We're playing checkers and dominoes.
And we ain't doing too hot.
No.
I'm just going to say.
Well, I think we're going to see a rise. I'm hopeful. We are the sleeping giant. There are two things.
I'm hopeful.
I need a first, again, I'm going to go back to what Dick Gregory said about, you know, go to Hollywood if you want to know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those Asian movies that is on Netflix, and they had a scene, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, they were in Florida, and these white guys were walking around with these Confederate flags, and they were offended. So the little Asian guy walks up, bam, 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 and they jumped in their car and they drove off. And he said, yeah, that's right. That's why it doesn't worry about me staying in a protest. I'll just buy the war, and you won't be able to come back. So they're buying up everything. I mean, this isn't popular culture.
That's right.
This isn't anything This isn't just, maybe
so.
It could have been.
I think so.
And I said, you know, this is so telling.
It really is.
Yes. And when you see it in popular culture, know that.
And it works.
It's real. It's real.
Strategy businesses.
It works.
Yeah. We buy it. We own it. Boom.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And then
yep.
the U.S.
Yep.
government can't really touch us because we own them.
Mm-hmm.
We don't own the government. We own all the stuff.
And this was a 50-year strategy.
Yeah.
This did not happen overnight.
And what they also,
this has been gradual.
What they
we are planning things in a 4-year presidential election.
Yes. If that. If that.
If that. We're not looking long term. That's going to go back to the problem is we are not big picture.
Right.
We are not looking at how does America fit within the global economy and global strategy and global policy. We are so short-term and we are reactive to things that are happening.
Yes.
We're trying to fix problems as opposed to get in front of problems.
We play a classic game of whack-a-mole.
Oh, whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Whack-a-mole.
And I love that game because
thing
it gets rid of a lot of stress.
Another
in fact,
thing
I would like to have a whack-a-mole game here.
Another thing that the Chinese did was they said to a number of African nations, we will lend you the money to build your infrastructure. And you will pay us back.
Mm-hmm.
But you will use our labor. So you will not learn to build roads and bridges.
That's right.
You will pay us or pay our people
mm-hmm.
to build your roads and bridges. And you will pay us back for the loan.
And mm-hmm. you will pay us to maintain them because if you don't build them, you don't know how to maintain them.
And
so
we will
give
your leaders
cycle.
A little something off the top. But that's what – so they don't do a transfer of knowledge.
Right.
They just – but when I've learned about the
labor.
That is so smart.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the nation said, yeah, okay, well, we'll be there.
Yeah.
But they were getting something off the top.
We pay for somebody else's fish as opposed to teaching our people
well,
to fish.
Right,
And that's what you're talking about, especially in Africa, that really sets me off. Because what you have is the richest continent in the world.
Yes.
Chinese realized that a long time ago. That's why they've always been over in Africa.
That's the one
and
that,
they
that's
did
what I'm talking about.
Exactly what you did. There was not transfer of knowledge.
Right.
But they would come in and they would be and they could work with the heads of government because the heads of government they owned the minerals, whether it was the oil or diamonds. I'm telling you it's you have such a have and have not in some of those countries that is
more extreme than the United States.
More extreme because of just that. And that's a whole different conversation for a whole different
show.
Because, to be honest with you, that continent, I mean, the wealthiest people are coming from Africa.
Oh, yeah.
They're educated in London.
Mm-hmm.
They have houses everywhere, including the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They come in, that the people that you see walking around here, you say, oh, look, 3-4 homes.
Don't get it twisted.
This is their third home.
Right.
Do not get it twisted. That's a whole other wealth discussion about how we're not even anywhere up in those conversations.
Right.
Any of those people. And nor do they want us to be, because heaven help, African Americans discover that.
Yeah. We have African Americans excited about building a 5,000 square foot home in Bowie. They looking around going, I got a 2,000 square foot home in Bowie, and then I got that 10,000 square foot home at home.
Mm-hmm.
So what else you got?
Or a vacation home.
We ain't talking about the vacation home.
In South Africa.
I'm flying first class everywhere going, I ain't taking Southwest, okay? Nothing against
Southwest. I'm from Southwest.
But I'm just saying.
But if you can get your private plane.
Yeah, I just think no,
and then you have that.
Your private plane.
Yeah.
You don't have to own a jet. You can now book
rent a luxury jet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you can leave when you want to.
And at the rate of an airfare, it might turn out to be a better deal.
Absolutely. That, but you know what? We should consider that for the 65.
Ooh. Now, wouldn't that be?
Let's rent her. Let's see.
Fly a private jet.
Fly to Paris.
The crazy Asians, they were hopping on jets like taxis. My thought was after Miss Anita coming back, where black people are in the scheme of things. I think we are the giant emerging for a few reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and there was a ball player that, you know, most of our ball players will have their tenure in sports and then go into something greater. But he was, I can't even remember who it was, but he offered a articulation because he was so big in stature that he would, with intention, lower his head and you know,
mm-hmm.
drop his back so he would not be intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the wealthiest person in the room, had more resources than anybody else, had more knowledge and education than anybody else. So what I think that coming on the heels of this whole Black Lives Matter piece
mm-hmm.
and people now recognizing and us not being timid, I'm going to use that word versus fearful,
mm-hmm.
of showing our greatness,
that
you're going to see it.
I think it's different.
Because we have wealth beyond imagination.
Yes,
and I see it. I see it.
And
I see
power.
It. And we don't
huge
flaunt it.
Biggest,
we just don't
amused,
flaunt it. I mean, Stacey Abrams proved that politically.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And we have all kinds of millionaires all over the world going into Africa and being able to see how those folks are functioning as well.
Mm-hmm.
You are just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Our time is now.
Mm-hmm. But that's also what's driving this whole
I agree.
Political partisan.
They see it before we actually see it.
Yes. They do, but we are now in a position to not be annihilated.
Right.
See, there was a time prior to now where if you rose up, you stood a great chance of being crushed down.
Right.
But see, we just
there's enough of us that have risen up.
Yeah, enough are up, and there are layers and layers and layers now.
So if you
even there,
even if you crush one, there's two more that are coming.
We're like baby seeds.
What I would love to see.
We don't die, we multiply.
Yeah,
you know what? And that's what I would love to see is the way we mobilize in 2022. Notwithstanding all of the things that are going on to stop us, that we mobilize and say, oh, so you thought that, you know, it's like.
Right. Oh, you thought that was something.
You thought that was something. The same numbers, notwithstanding everything that you're trying to put in front of us.
Well, that also means
we need to support those organizations that are on the front line.
Yeah.
And that is correct.
You know, so instead of buying that extra little thing on Amazon or, you know, buying that
mm-hmm.
extra pair of shoes, we need
mm-hmm.
to put money in the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. Stevenson. Brian Stevenson, his organization.
Yeah.
All those organizations on the front line voting these voting suppression laws,
mm-hmm.
they
mm-hmm.
have filed suit. That's where we need to invest
mm-hmm.
our money.
And do it quietly.
Yeah, there doesn't need to be a big flash.
Well, not only individually, because I've given to both organizations individually, I have encouraged my firm to also give to those organizations.
And D4, which is like the pipeline to get deltas in public office.
And public office, and start getting people of character running for local offices. And again, this is a pipeline issue. This is a short-term
mm-hmm.
and a long-term game.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and if we don't start now, we're going to be
sorry on November,
whatever, the second or third or whatever it is, or however long it takes the vote to count. We will be sitting here wishing we had done something. We have now got, a year and a half
I'm hopeful because after, you know, looking back over the last year with the whole George Floyd movement and what happened behind that and how that family has really just raised the bar on how you turn a horrific tragedy that everyone saw.
On the anniversary of the
death. And you've turned that into, you know, you've turned that into a real movement of people saying, no, we're not backing down. And seeing people who were not looking like you out there protesting. Gen Z, they're not having it.
Yeah.
They're just not having it. You know, you interview some of them, and I will watch some of those interviews. And I love Shaq Brewster on MSNBC because
mm-hmm.
the young fella, he's really on point.
And he's right in the middle.
He's in the middle of it, and you can see the poor baby is tired. He was out there, but he's not letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's just like, look, I remember that interview he asked that white guy. He said, okay, so why are you out here? He said, look, I'm trying to understand how to be a better ally. And Shaq asked the hard question. He said, and how do you exactly plan to do that? You know, not in a threatening way, but in a way of, okay, we've heard this song before.
How do you take
before.
The sentiment into real
right.
action?
We've heard
yes.
this song before. What else you got? And the guy was, he was as sincere as he could. He said, look, I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to learn. I googled it. You know, it's like
he said
I googled on how to be an ally. Mm-hmm.
I think he said I googled how to be a better white person.
Yeah,
yeah,
because
yeah.
he recognized
and that he had
a totally different
yeah.
perception, and he had privilege, and he never imagined. Yep. That's the other upside of COVID.
Exactly.
You know, as people have time to do research.
They realize everyone has been affected by this.
Not just that. That George Floyd videotape, if it had aired at any other time,
It would have been missed.
Sure.
In
we've seen it before.
Right. In the 5,000 channel yeah. universe, it's streaming. But everybody was at home.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, we had a captured national,
international
audience.
And the amount of time watching that is significantly horrific.
Yes. With the hand in the pocket, like, yeah, go ahead and film me.
It's like what?
Yeah.
Like
and
what?
The fact that not just that everybody was watching, but COVID put a whole new feeling of vulnerability.
Yes.
Of I'm out of control. The world is going crazy, and there's not a damn thing I can do about it.
Yeah.
If I go outside, I could die.
Right.
If I invite my friends and family over, I could die. There was
a sense of vulnerability.
There was a sense of loss of control and a sense of helplessness that everyone at home watching that, all those factors made that video more compelling. And that's what bought the Black Lives Matter.
I'd like to add something onto that, too. It made it very clear about our universal sense of morbidity.
Morbidity.
Yes.
Exactly.
And our universal sense and understanding of our humanity.
Yeah.
Nobody ever felt that before. Anyone who had been oppressed, anyone who had felt having their foot on someone's foot on their neck, anyone who had been oppressed, I'll just leave it at that.
By any means.
Understood that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And that's
the audacity of it being on television,
right.
being videotaped
right.
by people pleading for this man, get off his neck.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
By bystanders standing there watching helpless.
Yeah.
For a 17-year-old to have the
wherewithal to just
walk to the corner store to get a snack with her 9-year-old nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And to tape that, and to continue taping that,
to film that.
And that was that. It was it, she
because on some
she,
level
she
you had to you had to believe. On some level, for her, it was like this isn't really happening. Am I in a movie? Is it really happening? Or maybe I'm photobombing something.
Or maybe if he sees me filming in people,
he'll stop.
But he threatened her.
Yes,
he did.
He threatened her.
But in that moment, I think we also got understanding through her, and she is truly the unsung hero.
Yes.
I am my brother's keeper.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we are
she
in
said,
this
I did
together.
Not know this man. I did never met
didn't
him.
Know him from a camera.
But I knew he was important. He was someone's brother, someone's father, whatever.
Exactly.
He was someone.
Exactly.
He was me.
He was your brother.
Exactly.
He didn't feel like it was a stranger. If it was a woman.
I don't know. We've seen videos where they did not do things differently because it was a woman.
It was us.
And you didn't feel like it was a stranger.
No.
And none of us knew him. Right?
Chauvin
was just had his hands in his pocket like
I can get this every day.
On him.
Like,
and then
okay.
What happened to me? And, I don't care.
You know, and the
but
other,
no, it was the pure chutzpah of actually feeling as if, so what, you're filming me, nothing's going to happen to me.
The
I'm the cop.
Yes, talking about the calluses.
I'm the cop.
And cops will get
and this is no big deal. So you'll show the videotape. bim, bam, boom, we'll write it up differently. We'll write the report up differently. Right?
Report, oh my God.
And then we find out that the report indeed was written up differently.
Not just differently. Totally, it was a totally different situation. It wasn't just false.
And you're like,
it was fictional. It was fictional.
Well, it's the power of the police, but I read something today, and they fired this police chief. But basically, he threatened someone who was saying bad things about him on Facebook. He said, I will create a fake report. I will arrest you.
He said that?
Absolutely. And that's the dumb part. Got it out there. He said, if you don't do this, I will make up something, have you arrested, and they will believe me. That's the audacity the mindset of some of these police.
Yeah.
That I can do whatever I want and
without impunity.
Without impunity. So that's what you think. And they're dumb enough to think.
Well, here,
just passed some police accountability laws, and I think it only happened because the new Speaker of the House is a black woman.
Yes.
And it was her bill.
Adrian.
And it was her
Adrian
bill.
Jones,
she was like, 70 is my bill, and you need to,
one of my fellows,
you need to follow up with this. You need to support me on this. And so there were a slew of bills, but that one got passed. I mean, that one, I think they sort of incorporated some of the others into that one.
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember the young lady's name who filmed this.
I wish I could remember her name because it's one of those things where it's a person you don't ever want to forget.
Right. Well, she just wrote a on his anniversary death, and it was read by a wonderful poet on MSNBC.
Yep.
On the last word, her recollection. But she has not received the props she deserves.
No.
She needs to receive, you know, 4 years of college. Scholarship, you know, she needs to be taken care of. Like she said, she lost part of her childhood, and the fearfulness of what would happen to her. From the police,
from just
so she needs full support too.
Darnella Frazier,
thank you.
Fact checker.
That's the other part of it.
Right.
We cannot forget about where this happened.
Yes.
Right.
This did not happen in Georgia.
No.
This did not
happen in Alabama.
Right.
Didn't happen here. Didn't happen in Texas.
In the places where we would think that such racial
would happen.
We're talking Minnesota.
Yeah.
Prince's hometown. Prince's area. Yeah.
Oofta area.
I will be there in October. I'm invited to be the Sealha. I think it's University of Minnesota. It's a guest prominent guest lecturer position that they're flying me in.
Is it an acronym?
I don't know. I need to find more about it.
Okay.
She just knows they're flying her there.
The person that invited me is a young woman that I have worked with for the past 20 years who has been very supportive of minority and women ownership in broadcasting, as well as civil rights issues and equity. And I was invited to be their guest lecturer for the year. They only chose one guest lecturer for the year. I just got the invitation a couple of weeks ago. We picked on a date, and I just need to find more information. But it's in Minnesota, and I want to go for an extra day because I want to visit Prentice place. I've never been to Minnesota. Well, I'm sure it's a lovely place. And I don't want to be there in the wintertime.
October is going to be a crapshoot.
But having lived in Chicago, the weather is not any different. We're not talking about 20 degrees below zero. That's not talking about wintertime. I can deal with, if I have to bring my dog, I can do that. That's not a problem. So we're looking at late October to do that, after my birthday party.
Of course. So, ladies, we have, as usual, run the gamut of subjects, and people who are listening are probably wondering, do they talk like this all the time?
Why, yeah.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
inspired by not just regular mimosas, but you got to have a little GM, baby.
Yes.
Little
you grand, asked a question.
Grand Marnier.
What question did I ask?
You asked now that...
Oh, now that, COVID, that we're seeing the end of the tunnel.
COVID,
yeah.
Right.
You know, what's the first thing about?
Valerie
talked about?
Valerie said
travel. Just the freedom of... And we have to learn how to be free again.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. it's not automatic. I mean,
true.
We're all vaccinated. We still do things. We're still cautious. We, you know,
wear my mask out in public,
you know,
yep.
and shields and stuff. It's reclaiming our freedom, which is going to take something
yeah.
mentally.
Because yeah.
every time I leave my house now, I think 2-3 times, because that's the way I've
yep.
been indoctrinated for the last 15 months. Just letting, just getting that freedom back.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, we're here. This is the first place we came.
Yeah.
But we could. So we reclaimed our relationships,
that's
the
true.
People we haven't seen. We talk all the time. We
yeah.
zoomed all the time. We literally haven't seen. So just doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just think about the mental health drain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That this has caused
the stress.
A
yeah.
lot of people and the stress. And just unpacking that and take your time to unpack it. Because you wouldn't realize how much of this you've internalized until
yeah.
you just start to step back out and say, well, can I really do that? Is it really okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if something happens to a friend of yours, you go back with your, well,
yeah.
maybe it's too bad.
Right.
And so that's what I, you know, just to be here was a huge step.
Oh, yeah.
And we're sitting here without our masks. The last
yeah,
time
right.
we were here, we were socially distant, and we still wore our masks.
Yeah.
We still had our masks sitting on the pool 6 feet
yeah.
apart,
yeah.
you know, so we were still very cautious, and we had quarantined ourselves before we
yeah.
got here,
that's
you
true.
Know.
We're
so
vaccinated.
We're fully vaccinated.
And have been for a while.
Yes.
That's
and you can't come in my house if you're not vaccinated.
Yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
that's
come in my house.
Yeah.
And so I'm still there. You can't
I'm,
do that.
I'm kind of the mindset I'd love to have, you know, a temperature taker for you to even come
mm-hmm.
to my door.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's
why my thermometer is still by the door. That's why my hand sanitizer is still
mm-hmm.
by the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because I still feel the need to take caution.
Mm-hmm.
I would
yeah.
rather take caution.
I don't feel like we're
sorry.
Out of the woods yet.
No. Particularly when there's some people that lie who are
not
vaccinated
yet.
Really?
Not
crazy.
To be vaccinated.
And I just don't get that.
I don't either.
I'm
scared to death of needles, but I was so happy to pull my arm up on this one.
And let me just reiterate for folks, she is totally not lying. Needles and her are not friends. They are not friends.
I know.
Nope.
And I posted mine online in the part
which
that I left
hilarious.
Off,
let me just say.
Which is kind of funny. But I didn't want to bust out the place that gave me the shot. They forgot to give me my Band-Aid.
Oh. In my purse, I had my little sticker. I got back and I can
yeah.
back to
because we have lived through an experience where you were alive and vibrant on Monday and dead on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we really get very clear about what it is that we're supposed to do and discovering what it is that our impact is, and whatever that impact is, you don't have to search far for it. Whatever it is that your heart moves you and inspires you, then just do that. I also want to say this. I know I'm all the way over outside of the, off the radar sometimes, but I do that with intentionality with this group, because I recognize that each and every one of the women here is beyond brilliant. I've known most of you for most of my life. And two, no.
We got 52 years.
We got 52. Tell everybody.
Our whole
family, we are proud.
We've known
my point is.
That's a big deal.
My point is, when I drop stuff in, I know it's going to be worked out by the time I walk out.
Yeah.
Because of the brilliance that is around this circle. And I want you to just thank you and embrace you with the Wakanda hug.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is actually an ancient Egyptian
thing. Yes, it is.
Is it really?
I love each of you.
And in closing with that, I'm going to get another case of champagne.
Yay!
So I want to tell everyone, we delayed brunch. I burned the bacon, unfortunately. I love y'all. I'm sorry. I burned the bacon thinking that we would be able to get it done, and so we'll have some bacon.
You know,
and the shrimp and grits all over
again. Valerie was so calm because she didn't come back and
say, you burned the bacon.
Well, first of all, we were recording. Second of all, I knew I had more. Third, I know Janelle had something. It's not.
Yeah, it wasn't a total disaster.
It's not an emergency.
Right.
Yeah,
well, the emergency would have been if I had to drive over to Aldi Food Line or somebody to
get
some
more
bacon.
Right.
And my car is at the ready to drive straight out, so we could
have
done it.
All right.
But what I want to do is ask you, if there was a word that you needed to describe how you plan to live the next, and now tomorrow, what? Tuesday is June 1st, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means we've got 6 months left.
Wow.
If you were having to be, let's fast forward 20 years in the future, and you had to try and remember what was the word that got you through the second half of 2021, what was that one word? I can tell you what mine would be. It would be grace.
Hmm.
I've had an enormous amount of grace, an enormous amount of blessings, even though there have been for the last 16 months. I've had a lot of grace, and I am thankful for that. It has always reminded me that I have sister friends who are there no matter what. My rock, my ride or die girl, Anita. Y'all just don't know. For real. Y'all just don't know.
My word would be family. Because I consider you all my family. And then my blood family, which I've rediscovered in many ways. All of that is family. All of you ground me. All of you make me whole.
Mm-hmm.
All of you keep me honest and real. And care about me. And those are the things I need to survive, no matter where I am. You know, there's grace in that. But to me, family is more important. I think during COVID, in some ways, the sense of family became more important, because for things that we used to take for granted, of seeing grandparents and hanging out with friends and going to places.
Just coming here.
Mm-hmm. Those things we lost. We lost. And for people that don't have family, as in blood family, you can be just as close to people that are not your blood, but that are in your blood, that share the same concepts, share the same sense of morality, share the same sense of purpose, share the same sense of love. And in some ways, you are closer to me than my blood family, because I have known you much closer. Like I said, I've rediscovered on a whole different level. And you're physically here. My blood family is not physically in Maryland. You have been here for me during some of my worst times and challenges, and for my parents' worst times and challenges. So to me, family is important. Family is the word that's going to get me through the rest of my life.
And we are most definitely here.
Yeah.
And the
the word I would say is legacy.
Speaking of that damn phone,
that phone, that phone is part of my legacy.
Working all the time, Anita.
That is that. I will say legacy because you know, we're all healthy, thank God,
we're proud.
But what I think about is, to your point, you said I didn't take purpose, but I was about to say that, but I will say legacy is how you choose to create a footprint for others to follow.
Or make a difference.
Or make that, and it's not major stuff. I'm not talking about, oh, I got to do
this.
But it is how you, because we are all comfortable in our skin.
Yeah.
We are all at that stage where, you know, we tease that we don't have a filter because, you know,
we really don't.
I'm saying anything. But now is how I realize the importance, I don't have children of my own, but the importance of a generation that I want to impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need that. And if I'm not reaching out at this stage of my life to do that, to somehow mentor or to somehow bring this other generation forward, then when we step off, we're still in the same place. So for me, thinking about how I do that, not in any resounding way or applause way, just little things.
But even bringing one person behind you.
Exactly. It's something that I really want to be focused on because, you know, we're on the other side of the mountain. How long that mountain is, you know, God will. But somewhere along the way, I want to make sure that somebody sort of said, you know, that word that she said or what she did or who she put me in touch with helped me get to here. And, you know, returning that call as you go, oh, child, I don't know, like talking about y'all today. Just doing that, what, you know, but you do it, and you have this profound effect that you don't even realize that you have.
Yeah.
Just paying attention to that, I think, for me, is going to be something that I have to work on, that I think is important, but that's legacy.
I would say intention.
Mm.
I so often think, what's next? What do I have to do next? And I think forward. But I've lately been thinking, what's now what am I doing in the moment? What am I doing? Because everything you do in the moment affects what happens later. So let me exercise because I want to be able to travel. Let me hear my daughters because I love them and I want to help them. And I can help them in ways that they don't recognize and I won't recognize if I don't hear them. So let me be, and I mean both of my daughters, and it's been really good, and I'll tell you about that later. But, just to be intent at work and in my personal life to say, how can I make where I am and what I'm doing better and recognize that what I am doing is appreciated and valued? People are telling me that has made it better. And that means a lot to me, whether it's my kids saying it, my coworkers saying it, even some of my neighbors, like, that was good. You bet you did that. You spoke up in the community meeting, and that's what I wanted to say, and that's what they needed to hear, that level of intention of feeling they're making an impact in the present while influencing two little people I created who are making an influence in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making influence in the present as well.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about them later. But
they are amazing people.
They are amazing people. And I take responsibility for them, too.
I'm like, I made you, and you were doing what?
As opposed to I brought you in this world
and I take you out.
I'm not going to take them out.
I'm going to tell them.
I want them to.
I understand that. And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
My word is boldly. Mm. Live boldly. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Amen.
So we have grace. We have family. We have legacy. Intention. And boldly. And I think that describes us all quite perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think that describes us all quite perfectly.
Mm.
So with that said, we're going to finish off this second pitcher of mimosas.
Woo-hoo!
And get ready to start on the third.
And note that a pitcher of mimosas includes a full bottle of champagne.
And Grand Marnier. My face
is like half frozen now. Okay.
And it's only 12. It's only 1 o'clock.
I can't even tell.
And unfortunately, Actually, we couldn't be out by the menopause pool, but I wouldn't care because I am with my favorite people in the world.
Breeze coming in from that.
Exactly. I am with my favorite people in the world and one of my favorite places in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Next Saturday, join me as we have our good friend Debbie Johnson, who will be here tomorrow to see us all and become inducted in Club Med Cambridge.
All right.
And Debbie will be talking with us about refreshing your closet and talking about summer and what she has in her cabbie closet, so you don't want to miss that at 10 o'clock. As always, everyone, please, please, please be kind. Love one another. And have a great holiday weekend. We'll see you next time.
Back production, located in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, is a full
service
you and your clients like A-list celebrities. From the selection of your design and creation of your invitation to the last goodbye and thank you for attending, they help you put love into the details without sacrificing quality. Give them a call today at 240-472-9432. Visit blackbagproductionsonline.com and they'll show you how they can create an unforgettable event for you.